The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Douglas.
And we've covered the topic of pain before on this podcast. We've talked about the future of pain, pain management. We've dipped our toes in the whole discussion of where does pain come from, why does it exist, how does it factor into our experience of reality. Mm-hmm. In this episode, we really want to get into the question, why do we seek out pain? I mean, we've all seen images. We've all seen footage of various ritualistic pain exercises going on around the globe. And a lot of us have probably asked, why would they do that? Why are they doing that? Why is that person sticking that sharp thing through their body right now completely of their own free will? Why are they engaging in self-harm? What are they getting out of it? And it's a fascinating question when you start breaking it apart, when you start looking at the studies that have examined the benefits of pain, that the weird crossover between pleasure and pain. And so that is what we're attempting to tackle in this episode.
Yeah. And I wanted to mention real quick, we are just exploring this topic. We are, of course, not advocating that anyone undergo feats of pain so that they can achieve some sort of transcendence. This is just kind of looking at pain and pleasure and the social aspects of why people would engage in pain, what sort of benefits, why would they do it? It's an exploration of these different questions. And the best way to get at it is to really look at some of the more historical rituals of pain.
I'd say for me, one of the earliest examples I became aware of was Christian flagellation. And this was probably from like seeing the movie The Name of the Rose mm-hmm. at a real early age. And there's a scene in there where a monk is punishing himself by striking his back with mm-hmm. lashes. And, and at the time I was too young to really understand all that was going on in that scenario.
Yeah.
But it had an impact on me. Here's somebody that has devoted their life to God and they are inflicting pain upon themselves. Well, and of course, to tie that even more, I grew up in the Christian church.
Mm-hmm.
And so I always was confronted to the point of almost not seeing it, this image of someone suffering on a cross. But more on that later.
Yeah, and my first, I guess you would say, introduction to mortification of the flesh for spiritual reasons was the hair shirt. which is, you know, a, sort of a signature of some early Christian sects who are doing penance for what they perceived as a sin. And the idea is that you have this shirt that looks maybe great on the outside, but on the inside it's lined with coarse goat's hair, and it's meant to be this fleshly reminder of your transgression. And some people even would weave twigs or thin wires. Mm. And so this idea that this constant irritation is a reminder that you are not only expressing your faith in the transgression that occurred, but also you're trying to train your soul into the right direction with this fleshly reminder.
There's a great parody of this kind of a thing in, of course, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, where you see the monks in a line filing through the village, and then they're chanting something in Latin and then smacking themselves in the face with a board. But they're playing on the tradition of the flagellants who, in the 14th century, you know, amid this atmosphere of fear and uncertainty, I mean, you had war raging, you had black death creeping from door to door, and all the while, supposedly God's watching on high, rather unmoved by all of this. So you end up speaking the language of pain. I mean, that's what this is all about. It's about seeking penance for the sin of the world, seeking mm-hmm. penance through physical punishment of the self. And so they're walking around, they're punishing themselves and trying to sort of take the sins of the world upon them, saying, look, if essentially laying out the argument, all right, God, if I beat myself enough times, will you maybe just lighten the load on all of us?
Yeah, and there's a kind of obedience factor at play there, yeah. as well as this sort of like self-rigor.
Yeah. And of course, all of this is taking place within a faith that has at its center a man suffering and dying on an instrument of torture. So the story of pain, the story of suffering permeates the entire worldview.
Now, you can also look at Islam for another example of mortification of the flesh.
Yes, the Islamic day of Ashura. This is a time when some Shia Muslims practice self-flagellation on the day to commemorate the suffering of Imam Hussein, the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad, the suffering and death of Imam Hussein. And so, you know, this is another example of them engaging, reenacting, feeling the pain of an existing story within their faith.
Yeah, and what I think is interesting about that is that it's this metaphorical thing. At the mm-hmm. same time, they are bringing the physical body into it, but transcendence is certainly at play here, mm-hmm. and devotion is at play. And then you have various firewalking rituals around the world.
Indeed, there are a number of examples that we mentioned in our episode on firewalking. So if you want a deeper dive into the science of firewalking, the trickery of firewalking, that's definitely a podcast you should listen to. But again, this takes place around the world, everywhere from corporate retreats to the Christian firewalking tradition in northern Greece, the festival of Anastinaria. This is when it's all about the idea that Saint Constantine protects them from being burned because they have this faith in them and devotion to him. But it's essentially walking across hot coals.
Yeah, and if you can do it without crying out or without pain, then surely you must be the most devoted. But when in fact we know that we have really thick soles on our feet and they insulate yeah. us from heat pretty well.
But you know, it gets complicated in all of these rituals because there are going to be varying degrees of actual pain, but an actual physical pain, but layered upon all of that is the storytelling and the experience and some of the scientific principles that we're going to discuss later on.
Now, This next example is from a vegetarian festival in Thailand,
which sounds lovely.
Like, I bet that there's all sorts of like wonderful artisanal cheeses you can get, and
the Thai are known for their artisanal cheeses.
Yeah, and lots of tie dye, right?
Yeah.
No.
But no, it does sound great because you're thinking, oh, vegetarian Thai. I love vegetarian Thai.
I'm going to that.
Bringing the kids. It's a little more complicated than that, however. The Phuket Vegetarian Festival is certainly colorful. It's held over a 9-day period in October, and it celebrates the Chinese community's belief that abstinence from meat and various stimulants during the 9th lunar month of the Chinese calendar will help them obtain good health and peace of mind. And amid this, you see firewalking, you see body piercing, and other acts of self-mortification that are all about the participants acting as ultimately as mediums for the gods.
Yeah, they remove parts of their skin perform bloodletting,
mm-hmm.
impale their cheeks and limbs with anything from knives and skewers to antlers and umbrellas. And didn't you say that you even saw a lamp?
Yes, I think I saw a lamp in one image. But it's interesting that this is a festival where you see the bodily mortification as well as simply altering your diet. Again, showing that there's a broad spectrum that entails self-punishment and just self-denial, that they're all ultimately kind of shades of the same thing. And again, wrapped within ritual, wrapped within worldview and belief.
And I know you want to hit that big theme, but I'm going to have to go back to something pretty pedestrian.
Okay.
The crowd gets in by throwing firecrackers at the people who are doing these acts of mortification of the flesh. I'm just saying.
Just add a little extra.
A little Vegas.
Yeah, and it is important. This will come up as we get into some of the studies, but not only are the people suffering and or at least engaging in physical pain
mm-hmm.
in these rituals important, but the people beholding it are important.
And we'll talk about the social construct behind this because it's pretty fascinating. Another festival that you might want to attend is the Hindu Thaipusam Festival.
Yes, this is a festival celebrated mostly by the Tamil community on the full moon of the Tamil month of Thai. That's January, February. And the festival commemorates the occasion when Pavarti gave Murugan a special spear to defeat the demon Sporadaman. So on this day of the festival, devotees will shave their heads and they'll undertake a pilgrimage on a set road while engaging in various acts of devotion. Notably, they're carrying out different types of burdens or kavadi. In its simplest form, this can entail simply carrying a pot of milk. But it also can involve mortification of the flesh. Piercing of the skin, tongue, or cheeks with skewers is one of the examples that you'll generally see in any photos of this event. Certainly the photos that tend to, make their way around the internet. And again, people end up looking at these and they're saying, who are these people? Why are they doing this thing that they do? And as we're unrolling, we see examples of this in all sorts of worldviews, all sorts of religious rituals around the world.
Yeah, and lest you judge too quickly, again, hang on, because we're going to talk about some other modern-day things that we do that mm-hmm. are on par with this. But one of the things that's brought up in this festival is that sometimes pierced worshipers are sometimes attached to ropes with the hooks that are in their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're pulled by other devotees, and they are suspended in the air from their flesh.
Ah, suspension.
Yes, which figures pretty prominently in the Okipa hook suspension ceremony. This is a Native American ritual.
Yeah, and this would generally take place in a big enclosed tent. An individual would have been would have multiple hooks put into their skin
mm-hmm.
because you can't just have one because it's kind of the bed of nails scenario, right?
Yeah,
a bed of one nail means you're going to have a nail sticking in your back. A bed of multiple nails means that your weight is distributed evenly.
Yeah, it's an engineering solution, basically.
Yeah. Of course, that's not to say that there's a lack of pain in the hook suspension ceremony. You have physical pain. You have this lifting off the ground. This
mm-hmm.
almost ascension motif taking place. And then the individual is in the throes of this sensation. A number of people out there are probably familiar with this or probably having some sort of, flag go off in their head because Richard Harris engaged in this in the film A Man Called Horse, which is an old Western.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember catching part of it or seeing an ad for it on TBS when I was a kid. And I remember looking at it and thinking, oh, that's horrible. What these people ended up doing to this Richard Harris character in this film. I don't want to see that. At the time, not realizing, not knowing that this was actually a voluntary ritual. That again, pain and pleasure are far more complex than we give them credit.
Yeah, the Mandan tribe is one of the tribes known to practice this, and they would suspend young warriors in an annual rite of passage ceremony that was celebrating the creation of the earth.
Now, another example that comes to mind, and this is one that relates back to Christianity. In the Philippines, you see Catholics in the Philippines every year engaging in reenactments of the Passion of the Christ. So we're talking actual self-crucifixion. Well, I say self-crucifixion, but to engage in crucifixion, you generally need a little help. It's kind of a hard thing to do.
To do by yourself.
Yeah, one-handed. And in this, we're seeing them actually physically, with pain, reenact the pivotal scene of torture and death at the center of the Christian faith. And, we're not talking
hundreds of people. Sometimes I've seen accounts where you're generally looking at maybe a dozen, two dozen Filipinos engaging in this particular practice. But then people are watching, and by watching, you're also taking part in the ritual.
Well, and this isn't too far away from some of the feats of physical strength or endurance that someone in the Jim Rose circus might undergo.
Indeed. You see people lining up to see physical spectacles of, that seem to have suffering involved in them all the time. And just within the whole world of the Passion of the Christ, you see plenty of reenactments of that throughout the Christian world that don't entail actual physical suffering, but mm-hmm. they are a reenactment of this event. And really, I mean, when you get down to it, just a reenactment of it without the pain, just a physical image of it is on some level pretty intense, kind of disturbing. I mean, again, you see it enough times, you tend to not see it anymore, but there it is.
Indeed.
Now, if you end up listening to this podcast on the website, I'll make sure that I have a gallery that goes up that includes some images from some of these festivals and a few that we didn't mention. Because, again, there are various rituals, various rites that take place around the world that involve physical pain. But that does not mean that the religious world has a monopoly on this sort of thing. You see an entire secular tradition of self-inflicted or at least voluntary receiving of pain in the BDSM community.
Or giving of pain, which also...
Yes, the giving is, and the receiving.
Is very much involved in that.
But it's important to note that we're within the BDSM scene, we're talking about a consensual arrangement. And within BDSM also, you see an entire spectrum. You see just, you know, individuals lightly spanking one another. You also see individuals engaging in suspension, body modification, etc. And then also sometimes suspension winds up as part of art, part of performance art. In our performance art episode, we mentioned the performer Steelark. And, of course, he's engaged in various thought-provoking but at times disturbing performances that involve bodily modification on some level or another, and he's engaged in suspension rituals, if you will, several times in the past.
Yeah, and within BDSM, it's not always about sex, as we'll talk about later. There's a sort of a transcendent component to this.
Yeah.
Now, to talk about probably the most consensual relationship you could have, one would be your morning workout and yourself.
That's right.
Because, presumably that's consensual.
Because what's the big saying, right? Feel the burn, right?
Yeah.
I mean, whether you're going out in the morning and doing your morning run, if you're fitting in, you know, time at the yoga studio, if you're, you know, furiously doing push-ups or pull-ups in the afternoon, there's always this, you're pushing yourself, and you're often pushing yourself into an area that is on some level uncomfortable, but then also rewarding. Also at the time, even kind of physically rewarding as opposed to just after the fact.
Mm-hmm.
So if nothing else, think to your own exercise routine when we're discussing all of this, because you see shadows of a lot of it just in that.
Yeah, I mean, pushing the envelope of your abilities does put you sometimes into that pain area, but there's a certain kind of pleasure in that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we get back, we are going to talk about the crossover with pain and pleasure.
Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples.
Rob, as the local host with allergies here, they sent you some of their nasal spray to treat your allergies. What was your experience like?
Yeah, that's right. I always wrestle with the pollen a bit when it rolls in during the spring. So they sent me the little nasal spray. I tried out the product, and yeah, it sure did help me get on top of my symptoms for the day. And it's so fast acting, it was already kicking in before I left the house.
Astapro is a first of its kind nasal allergy spray. It's the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing.
Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can get Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. Astapro and go. Use this directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, we're back. We're discussing pain, the zen of pain. We've already laid out a number of examples, some of which are probably exotic to you, and then some of which are right down home and in your living room. And in all this, I also keep thinking of what's that awful song that had that line, hurt so good, make it hurt so good?
John Cougar Mellencamp.
Was that
hurt so good. Come on, baby, make it hurt so good. That was the Cher
exactly.
version.
The Cher version is the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
But that lyric is great because at first it seems paradoxical, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hurt so good. How can it hurt so good?
Mm-hmm.
Hurt is bad. It's kind of like that line in Roadhouse where Patrick Swayze says, pain don't hurt. How could pain not hurt? Pain hurt. Pain is hurt. Pain. This is what it's doing. What are you talking about, Swayze? But.
Wow. A Roadhouse reference.
Yeah. Roadhouse is in its way a great film. I've seen it multiple times.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, because they're not only bouncers, they're bouncer philosophers.
Well, and that's kind of a good example of how your amygdala is also doing double duty.
Right.
It's a bouncer of your emotions and a philosophizer of your emotions. Because the thing that we know is that the amygdala processes both pain physically and emotionally. It also processes other emotions like pleasure and fear and joy. So it would make sense that the perception of pain, whether it's from like social rejection or whether it's from an injury to your flesh, would be bound up in one another, not to mention the other things that we feel in life.
Indeed. Back in 2002, as an example of this, Harvard researchers
conducted an experiment where they heated the hands of 8 volunteers to the point of pain while they underwent brain scans. And the scan showed activity not only in brain regions typically associated with pain, but also in those devoted to enjoying pleasurable things like food, drugs, and sex.
Mm-hmm.
So there we see that crossover. And this leads us next to a substance we're always talking about when it comes to human behavior and human desires and our reward system. And that is, of course, dopamine.
Yeah, because what we have is we've got this thing called the nucleus accumbens, and it's a neural network in the middle of the brain. It's the engine of the reward response, which deals a lot in dopamine. And in a 1999 study led by John Levine at the University of San Francisco, it was determined that the reward pathway activates pain relief through the release of both opioids, which is a morphine-like drug produced by the body, and dopamine, which is that chemical messenger whose effects can be mimicked by amphetamine and cocaine. That's why it's so hard to beat addiction. So the findings overturn this long-held assumption that the release of dopamine in the nucleus accumbens is associated only with positive experiences. Here we see examples of it being released in a pain context.
Now, bear in mind that we're talking about rituals in a lot of these cases as well. And rituals in and of themselves can be arousing. And as rituals become more arousing, they can trigger hormones and stimulate the reward system of the brain. This, according to anthropologist Dimitri Zygalatis, can cause sensations such as pain and fear to transform into pleasurable experiences through a spike in the neurotransmitter dopamine and an increase in neuropeptides called endorphins, which bind to the brain's opiate receptors and produce the same soothing euphoria felt by a marathon runner. Again, we come back to exercise. We come around to the runner's high.
Yeah, that's a good way to contextualize this. Like, why would dopamine be released when I'm experiencing pain, right? Mm-hmm. Well, because these sort of things are crossed over in one another in the brain, and because this is very much learned behavior. It doesn't matter what the thing is that makes the dopamine happen. You're going to go to the thing
right.
If it becomes routinized enough. It could be food. It could be pain.
And that is why it could hurt so good. Another way that it could hurt so good is if it doesn't hurt as much as you expected it to hurt. This is pretty interesting. According to a 2013 study from the University of Oslo, pain that hits less severely than expected, as in, you didn't spank me nearly as hard as I thought you would, that can give us a rush of release or even something like pleasure.
Which is kind of interesting, and I was thinking about it in the context of Adele.
Okay, go
on. And that's thanks to Noel, our producer, because he had brought up that her song, Somebody Like You, mm-hmm. is a real, not in addition to it being a real tearjerker for people, that it has this thing that it's doing, and it's creating a sort of, I don't know if I would call it pain, but maybe metaphorical pain in the brain.
Okay.
In other words, it has this highly dissonant chord directly on that you lyric. So somebody like you, and she messes with that you lyric. And the reason why this is problematic for the brain is because the brain likes a nice pattern. And up until then, there's been this pattern that it can follow along with.
Mm-hmm.
But just that one little change in that you lyric creates this frisson, this friction in the brain. And that's when you see the moment before dopamine is released in the brain, because as soon as that friction gets resolved within the next chord,
mm-hmm.
which then follows back into a pattern, the brain is almost like, oh, that didn't feel as bad as I thought it was going to. And this is just in music and on the symbolic level. So that's why I bring it up, because when we're talking about perceptions of discomfort and pain, we're meeting them in different scenarios in our life, even in songs.
I think this is a great point, bringing up the pattern recognition, because from what I've read, a lot of these BDSM situations, and we're talking about the lower end of the spectrum, not hanging from hooks, but it's not a situation where someone says, all right, spank me 8 times, and then someone spanks them 8 times as hard as they can. There are going to be varying levels of pain, varying levels of sensation,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes pleasurable and painful that are going on there. And the brain inevitably of the person receiving these sensations, they're going to inevitably try to identify the patterns and find the patterns in this chorus of pain and pleasure that they are receiving.
Which kind of gets us into this next section. And which we talk about the community of pain, because, you know, obviously a person can do this, can engage in acts of pain unto themselves, but we see so many different scenarios, not just in historical context, in which people will engage in this kind of ritual as a sort of bonding experience.
And in this, we have to refer to an excellent article by anthropologist Dimitri Zygalatis, who we mentioned earlier. His article, Trial by Fire, From Firewalking to the Ice Bucket Challenge, Ritual Pain and Suffering Forge Intense Social Bonds. And this was published online in the excellent Eon magazine. According to Zygalatis, cognitive dissonance theory holds that when the cost or the effort spent in pursuing a goal is disproportionately higher than its reward, this dissonance that we feel, this gap mm-hmm. between the cost and the product, out of that we end up with this like area of mental stress, right? No one wants to pay more for a product than it's worth. No one wants to suffer for something that's ultimately not worth suffering. So what do you do? Your mind just reorganizes everything and ends up engaging in what they call effort justification. So it's like if someone says, hey, that reward you got, you really had to go through hell to get it. Was it worth it? Of course it was worth it, because I there's no way I did all of that for nothing. There's no way that badge is not worth all the effort I put into it.
Yeah, a good example of this, again, brought to us by Dimitri Zygalatis, is, quote, in a classic psychology experiment conducted in 1959, the psychologist Elliot Aronson of Stanford and Judson Mills of the United States Army found that people who had to go through a highly embarrassing situation in order to join a discussion group subsequently reported liking the group more. In a follow-up study, researchers used electric shocks and found that those who received severe shocks before entering the group valued their membership more than those who received merely mild ones.
Very interesting. And that instantly brings to mind various rites of passage that exist out there, from physically painful rites of passage that involve bodily modification mm-hmm. to even some of the examples of hazing out there in university settings.
That's
and fraternities.
That's what I was just thinking. This is ritual abuse, this mm-hmm. practice. And fraternities have what they call Hell Week, right? That's when you are indoctrinated into this group. And we're talking about sexual abuse. In some cases, we're talking about the forced consumption of mind-altering drugs and alcohol, enduring feats of strength and pain, like boiling hot water on the back, right? Mm-hmm. Drinking pitchers of water until your brain swells. So here you see a very communal aspect, and particularly through the lens of fraternity, you see how it becomes that much more important that you gain that membership, because you put your body and mind on the line.
You know, and there are perhaps softer examples of this too, when you see like corporate retreats. People go out on this retreat. They go through certain experiences that are probably not all that painful, but it's the community aspect of it. It's the price that you're paying for it.
Those non-trust falls hurt
non-trust fall.
A lot.
Also arguably boot camp in a military situation. Yeah. You know, you're going through what is by all accounts a physically and emotionally demanding time, but that you're supposed to emerge from that at the other end as a more cohesive group.
Well, I think that's why those types of exercise classes are so popular.
Yeah.
In a sense, because you do get that kind of bonding.
And nobody's going to, at the end of the day, say, well, they really kind of beat the hell out of you in that boot camp class that you took at the park. Was it really worth it? Do you feel better? Of course I feel better, because there's no way that I got up early to suffer like that for a month if I don't feel great now.
And look at these guns.
Yes. Now, another item that Zygalatis brings up is the idea of collective effervescence. And this comes to us from French sociologist Émile Durkheim, who argued in Elementary Forms of Religious Life, that's a 1912 publication, that the collective performance of ritual generates a kind of electricity. So this is, this shock, this ecstatic state of shared excitement just kind of moves through a group of people that are engaged in a ritual, or even in any kind of ritualistic endeavor. So this could be a bunch of people singing a hymn at the local church. This could be people engaging in the burning of an effigy at a Burning Man type event,
or even engaging in icebreakers at that corporate retreat.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, it's about cooperation. And we've talked about how this is like one of the cornerstones of humanity that's allowed us to be so successful as a species. This idea that we're gonna sign on this dotted line of the social contract and say, yes, we'll cooperate. When we get into a gym together, we will all stomp our feet together and we will cheer for the team and we will engage in this as a group and we'll get together as a group.
Yeah, we're going to align our emotional states. And no matter what our differences are, we can agree on maybe at least one thing. That Jesus guy's pretty good. That Muhammad guy's pretty good.
That, Jesus is just all
you know,
right.
The idea being that within any kind of a community that is engaged in some sort of ritualistic endeavor, you're going to see emotional states align. There's going to be this core, this center of the wheel that everyone is attuned to.
Now, you might be thinking, okay, fine, I get it. People get together, they do things, they sync up. But it seems a little like hooey that the pain could be such a ritualized collective event that people would willingly submit themselves to this. And we have a little study that might underscore the fact that, yes, people will do this.
Yeah, and this was actually one that Zygalates conducted himself, carrying out at a during Thaipusam, which is we mentioned earlier, of course, and of course it's directly related to Kavadi, those burdens that people take on themselves.
This was the festival, not the vegetarian festival,
no.
But the other one.
Right. He found that those who had participated in the extreme rituals, again, the extreme Kavadis, gave twice as much as those who had taken part in collective prayer. He found that the same high levels of generosity among those who had themselves gone through the painful activities of the Kavadi and those who had merely followed the procession without engaging in any of this bodily mortification. Just as expected, the painful ritual boosted pro-social behavior in the participants.
And then in terms of having that stake in the process, right, or stake in your
right.
body, maybe, there's something called the martyrdom effect. And in 2011, the psychologist Christopher Olivola of the University of Warwick and Elder Shafir of Princeton demonstrated what is known as this martyrdom effect. And what they had is they had a series of experiments in which they asked participants to raise money for various charities and found that people donated more when they expected to suffer more. Hmm. For example, running 5 miles versus just attending a lovely picnic.
Or how about dumping a bucket of cold water on their head, right?
That sounds odd. What are you talking about? Who would do that?
Who would do that? Well, yeah, a lot of people, apparently, because the ALS Association, of course, raised $95
million
last
year. $95
million? Yes, to help fight ALS. And I assume everyone is familiar with this at this point. But if you're not, if somehow you missed out on the social media explosion that was the ALS Ice Bucket Challenge, it was individuals dumping or having a bucket of chilling ice water or ice dumped on their head, and then they challenge other people. And if you're honoring the whole idea of it, you're supposed to then go make a donation to the ALS Association, be it instead of dumping ice on your head or as part of dumping ice on your head.
What's interesting about that is that I don't think that anybody ever intended this, but every single one of those videos is a kind of data point in this pain pleasure experiment, right?
Right.
Of humanity, in which you do see people emerge on the other side giddy.
Giddy and evidently more likely to donate, either if you're,
right.
And that goes for people that are partaking in the ritual and presumably those who are actually just, on the other end of a computer watching some celebrity dump ice on their head.
And key to this, perhaps, is this idea that you are the participant, you are the hero in this story. So storytelling really factors into this. And when we get back, we're going to delve into it.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential and then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left, look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
All right, we are back. And one of the reasons why I think that Ice Bucket Challenge is really so successful is it is storytelling at its finest and quickest. And it's this cultural meme that has been passed around. And it's this thing that everybody can gather around and say, yeah, I experienced that. I didn't experience it with that person in Arkansas, but I, you know, directly, but we both had the same sort of thing, that ice cold moment and that rush of pleasure in experiencing it.
So, for instance, you might never know exactly what it's like to be David Lynch, but David Lynch has experienced the Ice Bucket Challenge. David Lynch knows what it's like to ritually have that ice raised above his head and then dumped upon him, and you can experience that too and be a part of the same story.
David Lynch and Pamela Anderson have something in common is what I'm saying.
It's pretty great. I it's just amazing how much depth there is to something that at surface level just seems like people doing a silly thing for a good cause. Now, when I was looking this up right before we did the podcast, I was
just going in to see what the latest stats were about how much money was raised mm-hmm. for the cause, I found some stories about the new Ice Bucket Challenge, or something that is brought up as possibly the new Ice Bucket Challenge, and that is the hashtag wake up call that is being rolled out by UNICEF, mm-hmm. raise money for UNICEF. So again, for a good cause, but the idea here is that people, especially celebrities, end up sharing pictures of themselves when they first wake up in the morning, which on the surface here sounds very out of keeping with everything that makes the Ice Bucket Challenge work, right? Because there's nothing painful about it. I guess the idea is that it could be humiliating or humanizing, maybe, that it's knocking you down a peg. And so you're suffering at the very shallow end of the suffering pool.
Especially if you're Naomi Campbell and you have this picture of yourself just waking up.
Looks like a magazine cover.
With your hair just perfectly spread over the pillow and the sort of morning dew settled upon your face. It was disgusting. I was like, now I feel like there's a morning Naomi Campbell phobia. It was terrible. I can't believe she did it.
It will be interesting to watch it and see how this particular hashtag, this particular fundraising social media cause.
Don't look at her. She looks like the sea hag in The Little Mermaid, the original. I'm making fun because, of course, she looked like a supermodel waking up. But yeah, I mean, there's this idea that, you know, she might be humiliating herself and submitting herself to this collective ritual.
And the ritual is important. And it is worth, again, stressing that in all these religious rituals and some of the secular ones, one is reenacting or engaging in a story of pain. And they're making the story true through pain. I mean, their pain becomes a testament to its reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in thinking about this, I come back to again, that central Christian image of Jesus on the cross. And I ran across something interesting recently, and I blogged about this on stufftoblowyourmind.com, so maybe some of you saw it. But if you look back to the earlier tradition, the earlier artistic tradition of representing Jesus on the cross, you'd see stuff like Alberto Soto's 1187 Christus Triumphus, which shows you this Christ on the cross with this serene kind of doughy look in his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Like this does not look like a man who is suffering. This looks like a man who is above pain. This looks like a God that is above human suffering.
That's the opioids.
Yeah, I guess. But this was actually the predominant style prior to the 13th century, after which it becomes increasingly proper to depict Christ as not only undergoing physical pain, but suffering physical pain like you and me. And you see one of the more just fantastic examples of this tradition in the Christ of Matthias Grunewald's Eisenheim altarpiece. And in this one, we see a God that is not only suffering, but appears to be diseased. And I go into the details for that in the blog post. I'll include a link on this podcast episode. But you see a vision of Christ that is intensely suffering, diseased even,
mm-hmm.
but in all of it is engaging in the kind of physical suffering that humans can relate to. Because, you know, imagine yourself, you're in this, you're poor, you're in a medieval town, there's Black Death knocking on the door, there's warfare raging. Which image can you relate to? Which image can you connect with and engage in the story? And that, of course, would be the Christ that is suffering, the Christ that actually feels pain like you feel pain.
Well, I would wager to bet that every single story that's ever been written, there is an element of suffering
yes.
within it, because that is, you cannot have a story without suffering. That is the human experience.
Yeah, life is suffering, and nobody wants to see a movie or read a book about an individual who has all their dreams come true. That is not a story. That is just a pipe dream. We want to see characters who were challenged, characters who
yeah.
suffer, characters. I mean, it's ultimately more about what people try to do than what they actually succeed in doing.
Even Yo Gabba Gabba narratives have suffering in them.
It's true. Somebody gets bit, and you're not supposed to do that. Not
yeah,
to your friends.
Gobel, isn't that the one who's always sad and suffering?
Gobel is always suffering. Occasionally, they cheer him up, but then he returns to being this epitome of childhood suffering. Yeah.
And maybe Gobel decides to take up ritualistic pain in order to try to fill himself with a sense of control over his destiny.
That's right. I mean, there's this whole idea of
of control versus chaos, which reminds us of the episode that we did on flow state, particularly if you're playing a game, right? Mm-hmm. You're engaging in some sort of limited version of reality in which there are set rules and you can actually take full command of the situation. It's challenging enough to engage you, but not too challenging, not so much that you're frustrated. And so you can see cases where ritual allows us to partake in this and engage in a flow state.
Well, and I would see this particularly in BDSM, right? Mm-hmm. Because in that sense, you're creating this sort of pushing your outer limits within something that's not going to necessarily break you.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, there are rules, there are limits, and it's about maybe edging towards those limits, but not surpassing them. That's why it's, you know, a BDSM dungeon is not an actual, stereotypical medieval dungeon where people are tortured. It's a consensual exploration of the senses, if you will.
Rickshaw.
A rickshaw, like a rickshaw cart?
No, that was my safe word.
Oh, okay. I was just
that's totally going to get cut out, right?
No, I mean, it made me try to picture a rickshaw cart environment within a BDSM club. Like, there's so many things that are a thing, it would not surprise me.
All right, let's talk about how this might translate to altered states.
Indeed, because this is the motif, right? You have someone engaging in sort of ritualistic pain, especially within a religious scenario, and they are achieving some sort of enlightenment, some sort of transcendence, or, you know, at least they're bringing themselves to tears, not out of pain, but out of relief, out of forgiveness even.
Yeah, I mean, if you're thinking about acts of self-flagellation, right? And,
yes.
You know, you see it, you understand the metaphor behind it, but why would there be a kind of transcendence here? And it turns out that what's happening in the brain really translates to a meditative experience.
Yeah. As far as forgiveness through pain goes, there's a fantastic 2011 study. This was conducted by psychological scientist Brock Bastian, who just has a fabulous name, I want to say.
Sure.
From the University of Queensland, Australia. And he set out to explore this idea. Why would striking yourself with a lash make you feel better about your transgressions? So Bastian's team recruited young male and female test subjects under the guise of a mental and physical acuity study. The researchers asked the test subjects to write a personal essay about a time in which they ostracized someone. And the aim here was to make these participants in the study feel guilty or immoral.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the control group just wrote personal essays about, you know, whatever, some sort of routine memory that wasn't going to make them feel guilty. The researchers then instructed both immoral volunteers and the controls to hold their hands in a bucket of ice water for as long as they could stand it. Others dipped their hand in a soothing bucket of warm water. So the question here that the study was posing, would immoral test subjects punish themselves with longer dips in the water, in the cold water rather, and would they feel better afterwards? And the answer is yes on both counts. Those who were primed to feel shame, again, by those personal mm-hmm. essays of ostracizing others, when they dipped their hands in the cold water, they held it for longer durations, and afterwards they described the dip as more painful and expressed reduced feelings of guilt afterwards. So Bastian's argument, and ultimately the argument of the study here, is that this illustrates our culturally altered understanding of pain. We've come to process it not only as negative environmental feedback, but also as justice and punishment. So on a psychological level, a little bit of a self-inflicted pain rebalances the scales that we've managed to unbalance in our lives.
Well, and I think that's interesting because that's where someone is able to achieve some sort of quiescence, right? Some sort of tranquility, even mm-hmm. if it's just fleeting. And we've talked about this before in context of meditation or yoga, is that there's this part of the brain called the default mode network. And it's the midline chatter that you hear in your head that's very involved with me, 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 right?
Yeah.
And in order to dim the lights on that, you've got to engage in something like meditation or something that takes you outside of yourself, which is where something like BDSM comes into, because that involves something called the dorsolateral network, which is very closely intertwined with this default mode network.
Yeah, this part of the brain is involved in distinguishing self from other. and is also involved in out-of-body experiences. A 2014 study from Northern Illinois University linked sadomasochism to altered states of mind in keeping with those achieved through yoga or meditation. The researchers administered cognitive tests to S&M participants following a switching scene, and based on the findings, they suspect that pain alters blood flow in the brain, particularly to that dorsolateral prefrontal cortex, which again plays this essential role in our ability to distinguish self from others. So, in other words, intense pain in this control setting may result in a feeling of oneness with humanity or even the universe, which again brings to mind these hook suspension ceremonies in which one is elevated, where one is rising up, with help from the hooks. I was looking around for feedback from suspension participants on this, and I found a quote from Alan Faulkner, who's the founder of TSD, the first suspension group, and often held up as the father of modern suspension. He said, "If life had a dial to adjust the volume, suspension has a way of accessing this invisible knob and turning it down," which at first may seem paradoxical, right? Because mm-hmm. you're thinking, what could be a more intense experience of life than hanging from a hook, right? You think, oh, well, these people are just adrenaline junkies. They just want to just go in there and hang from a hook. But here's this guy talking about how hanging from these hooks, suspended above the ground, was a way of turning everything down, of actually making the rest of his life sort of fade into the background.
Well, this calls back to the Mandan tribe that we were talking about mm-hmm. that also practiced suspension. And the idea was that not only was it just the celebration and this this sort of ritual and looking at how Earth was created, but it was this way of those participants to not only test their mettle, but clear their minds in order for visions to come to them, for a sort of a kind of grace to settle upon their brains.
So there you have it, the Zen of pain, or at least our exploration of this idea of pain and pleasure mixing together, of pain in a controlled environment leading to some level of transcendence. It's a powerful topic, and again, one you see shadows of throughout human culture, throughout religious traditions and secular traditions as well. And again, we want to underline, don't go out and hurt yourself because you listen to this podcast. We're not advocating self-harm in any way, shape, or form. But again, it's something we just see throughout human culture.
Yeah, this is not a celebration of pain. This is just an exploration of the tropes that we continue to see in society. And it's a fascinating topic. And we certainly do not want to scoot anything like, say, chronic pain or self-inflicted pain to the side here. Those are very important topics, and they deserve their own time. But again, this is just looking at pain in a different way.
Indeed, and if you want to listen to a discussion that goes more into the subject of chronic pain, do check out our past episode, The Future of Pain. You'll find that and other past episodes of the podcast at stufftoblowyourmind.com. That's the mothership. That's where you'll find all of our podcast episodes, our videos, blog posts as well.
And if you have any thoughts on this, if you have other examples that we missed of this sort of like ritual pain that we sometimes submit ourselves to, please send us your thoughts via email, and you can send them to blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Since every minute counts when you're a new parent, who wants to waste time washing bottles? Transform this daily chore with the Baby Brezza Bottle Washer Pro, the first machine that automatically washes, sterilizes, and dries bottles, pump parts, and sippy cups at the push of a button. Its 20 spray jets clean everything 100%. Plus, it sterilizes with steam, then dries with germ-free air. Don't waste time on tedious hand-washing. Let the Baby Brezza Bottle Washer Pro do it for you. Shop now at babybrezza.com.